getting really clear, which is hard and takes work, but is so worth it, to get super clear personally on the work you want to be doing, your vision, the clients you want to attract. And then guess what? It works because people clearly understand who you are, what you can help them with, and that definitely helps to attract the right client.
Welcome to the Smart Gets Paid podcast with me, Leah Niederthal. I help women land higher paying clients in their independent consulting businesses, but I've never been a salesperson. My background is in corporate marketing, and when I started my first consulting business, I learned pretty quickly that it's about 1,000 times harder to sell your own stuff than it is to sell someone else's. So I taught myself how to do it, and I created the sales approach that I now share with my clients so they can feel more comfortable in the sales process, get more of the right clients, and get paid way more for every client contract. So whether your client contracts are $5,000, $100,000, or more, if you want to work with more of the clients you love, do more of the work you love, and get paid more than you ever thought you could, then you're in the right place. Let's do it together. Thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to rate, review, and share. Hey there, Leah here, and thanks for tuning in. I hope that wherever you're listening to this, wherever you are right now, you're having a great week, making some good progress in your business, and taking some time for you. So the other night, my wife and I were looking around on Netflix for something to watch, you know, just as you do. And we came across a movie by Adam Sandler called Hustle. You know, I think we all know Adam Sandler from the Billy Madison years and Saturday Night Live. And this movie is one of his more recent movies. It's less of the slapstick comedy of the Billy Madison years and more thoughtful and sweet. It's about a man played by Adam Sandler, who's a talent scout for the Philadelphia 76ers. He basically travels to different countries and cities looking for the next unicorn player, you know, like the next LeBron James that nobody else has found yet. And it shows him spending weeks on the road, going from city to city, staying in hotel after hotel, away from his wife and daughter, you know, just doing the work of a travel scout. And this is like the first 5 minutes of the movie, so this is not really a spoiler or anything. And pretty soon it's revealed that he's on this grind of being a talent scout, but he really wants to be a coach. And he has the chops, like the ability to be a coach, but people don't see him as a coach. But he's so good at the scouting that people keep him on the road as a scout. Now, I won't say any more about the movie because I don't want to ruin it for you. And I actually really recommend watching it. It's a good movie, Hustle with Adam Sandler. And I was thinking about this movie as I was working on this episode, because in running a consulting business, so many women I talk to are sort of in a similar situation. We all want to be recognized as a strategic partner with our clients and recognized by our clients. But so many consultants find themselves stuck in the tactical, you know, more executional work. And they end up having to try and convince the client to see them as strategic partners or show them that they deserve to be treated that way. And it's not a comfortable position to feel like you have to convince someone to see your value. And much like Adam Sandler's character in Hustle, it can feel sort of demoralizing to know that you can do the strategic work, but you keep being asked to do the executional work. And it's heartbreaking to know that even though you can do it, it's just not how people see you. And over time, it can drain the joy out of your business. So how do you shift from execution to strategic consulting? That's what I'm talking about in my conversation with consultants Sarah and Corey Jackson. Sarah and Corey helped large nonprofits raise millions of dollars, but as you'll hear, they weren't always brought in for the high-level strategic work that they wanted to be doing. So as you listen into this episode, you're going to hear the steps they took to go from mostly tactical execution to strategic consulting with clients who see them as strategic partners. You're going to hear them share how they shifted their painkiller statement to clearly communicate their value. You'll hear their approach to LinkedIn and signaling their ideal clients, how they took control of their sales process and started getting more yeses. You'll hear the mindset shift that allowed them to establish better boundaries with clients. And you'll hear how Sarah and Corey make office space work as a married couple running a business. So take a listen to my conversation with Sarah and Corey Jackson. And at the end, I'll come back and share a lesson that you can apply to your business. And then hopefully someday soon, you'll partner with us to help you build your consulting business, and you'll come back on the podcast and share your story. Enjoy. So Sarah and Corey, it's so good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you so much. We're thrilled to be here.
I am so excited to be talking to you today. Why don't we start with you guys? Introduce yourselves.
Sure. So hello, I'm Sarah Jackson, and I run a consulting firm called Sarah J Consulting, or SJC. And we help nonprofit development shops to reach their multi-million dollar fundraising goals.
And Corey, you're allowed to talk too.
Awesome. I remember feeling like a bit of an imposter when I started with you all, because this amazing group of women, and I'm the dude coming along for the ride. And I joined Sarah about a year and a half ago after working in the nonprofit space as an ED for 9 years. And your services and helping us get where we are at was so critical at that moment in time. So it's just a great space that we're in now, and excited to have this conversation about it.
Awesome. You're also married. Just for the listeners, where are you located right this moment?
As you know so well from our meetings, we are in the same household in Boxford, Massachusetts, coming at you from a Zoom feed from two different offices in the same house, because guys, that's how it works. We work together really well, but we need our own space. So there you go.
There were so many times it would be like, Corey will be here in just a second. And Corey comes from the kitchen into his own office or something. It's great. All right. Well, so set the scene for everybody here. What was going on in your business before we started working together? What did you want to achieve that you were like, okay, this is the right time and it's the right time to focus on this?
Yeah. So I had been on my own as a consultant for 10 years before Corey joined me a year and a half ago. And at that time, a couple of things were happening. One is that I was feeling pretty tapped out around the clients I had gotten. My network and referrals and things got me quite far, got me like to 10 years. But I really felt I was hitting a plateau. Like I just couldn't advance to a new revenue level. I couldn't advance to a different type of client. So that was going on. And at the same time, Corey was joining me, bringing a whole other set of skills, expertise, potential clients. And I think we both felt like we needed to get our footing as a team, and we needed to get our footing in this, what was going to be this new level post plateau. So it was really a double whammy of I needed to do something differently with the business, and we needed to make sure that Corey was integrated really well as a partner. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Corey? Is that right?
Yeah. Is that your take?
And as I started, I think I thought a lot of business was just going to fly at me from all the people that were saying, oh, I can't wait till you're a consultant. I want to work with you. And it didn't happen. And so like we had to immediately, we were like, oh, we have no sales process. We're just totally relying on word of mouth. And obviously that wasn't working very well for us. So
yeah. It's all the people who actually probably do, they were excited for you to be a consultant, but I think you found what a lot of people find is that it just doesn't translate into like the business. You know, it's almost like, you know, it's like, I'm here in the, in the world, you know?
Yeah. My need for revenue didn't match their need for what time they wanted to start their project, or they weren't even the right clients in some cases. So it was interesting to learn all of that.
Let's talk about the right clients, because that was a big part of it. What type of clients did you find that you'd been working with, and what clients and projects did you actually really want?
I can start, and then Corey, maybe we can talk about what happened with you. But for many years, I had a sort of a lopsided portfolio of clients where I had a lot of development, writing, and communications clients. Great people, but it was really more of that churn and burn of the hourly, hands-on, very hourly, almost really more like freelancing as opposed to consulting. So I was in that world for a long time. And then sometimes I would sign on clients for consulting projects that just didn't feel like the right fit. Great organizations, good people, but then it just didn't feel quite right. And now, of course, in hindsight, I see that I wasn't being specific or signaling enough to those clients that I wanted. And I just couldn't see a way how to do that until we started working together. But maybe Corey, I'll let you talk about what happened to you initially, and then we can talk about who we're working with now.
Yeah, initially it was more of a void than it was the wrong clients. Like you were dealing with some of the wrong client issues. I was dealing with, where are they going to come from? And we weren't using LinkedIn at all, I would say. Right. Maybe a little, but not. I wasn't using it at all, and Sarah was using it minimally. I think we didn't understand the power of that platform for the lurkers, as I think you call them. And now we see it. Like we actually notice it when it happens, when somebody emails us or contacts us, and we're like, oh, they just like that post. I can see it actually happening.
Yeah, we love the lurkers. The lurkers are where your clients are. And just for you guys listening, I mean, lurkers, I know it sounds like creepy, but in any online community, studies show that most people will actually never take any action. They're just in read-only mode. And we call those lurkers. And if you post something and it gets 500 views and three people liked it, that means that 497 people saw it and did nothing. Those are the lurkers. And those are like, your clients are in the lurker group. And yeah, we love the lurkers. And when lurkers, what we say, unlurk themselves. They're like, I see you. I see that you are following along. I see that you're in some type of educational journey that we're a part of.
Yeah.
It's very cool to see that work.
Yes. It's really fun and validating when they unlurk. You're like, I'm signaling the right way. So they're connecting, they're picking up what I'm putting down type of thing. It's great.
Yeah. So Sarah, as Corey was coming in, you said you had this lopsided practice of like development, writing, and communications, but even the development work is that you were doing then is different than some of the development work you're doing now. So talk to me about what things look like now. Like, what's the mix in the business?
Totally. So I think since working with you, we've really attracted and signed clients that we want to be working with, the right kinds of clients, really moving away from the sort of very tactical work, which felt more freelancy, and really moving into that true consulting mode, which is really fun. So now I would say it's, let's say, 80% robust, very strategic engagements related to campaign planning, related to improving a development or fundraising office, just on an annual, for their annual fundraising basis. And really that 20% now are just a couple of writing clients that I've chosen to keep, who I've worked with for a long time, who really view me more from a value-based perspective than an hourly perspective. And it's much more about the value I bring as opposed to the hours I'm spending working for them.
Yeah. And I love that just as an example of, I think a lot of people are afraid to put a stake in the ground on who they actually want to work with and the types of projects they really want. And because they're afraid that if they do that, they'll be so limited with money and all this stuff. And what I say to everybody is like, you actually have the right to say yes to any client for any reason at any time. And so you're doing these bigger strategic projects, but you want to have the writing clients. In some cases, I don't know if this is the case for you, Sarah, but sometimes that more tactical work is very satisfying. You know, it's like, totally. I can bring my like big sky thinking, but you know what's awesome? Just like writing something and having it done.
Yeah.
You know? Like I was talking with another business owner, and I was like, yeah, you know, strategic, blah, 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 visionary, something, something, something. And like how you're not supposed to like tweak your own website. And I'm like, you know what, but you know what feels good sometimes? Like making a change and then pressing save and then having that be done, you know? So I don't know if that's the case for you.
Oh, 100%. I think we can be noodling on a really challenging campaign problem 1 minute. And then I'm like, you know what, I'm going to go write this 300 word VIP donor document thing because I can get it done quickly. I feel a sense of accomplishment. So yeah, it's nice. It's like a really great like left brain, right brain combo.
Totally.
Sarah also loves tweaking websites.
I really
it's really satisfying. Should we be tweaking our own websites? Probably not. But like it's sometimes it's just good to like do something super tactical.
Tori knows I'm definitely wanting a sense of accomplishment if I jump into Squarespace and I start like editing content, changing images. I think it's super fun.
The same thing as when she starts doing dishes and laundry and I realize, oh, something's up here. I got a
dishes laundry website.
Yeah. Listen, it's real.
I just wanted to add, like, her retainer clients were largely writing clients before. And now, like, our retainer clients, we've, through you and our work with you again, like, we learned how to keep an engagement going. And so we have several now retainer clients that keep re-upping for more months because they just want to stay with us. And it's more strategic conversations around fundraising. It's less us actually doing tactical work. So in that way, the retainers have changed as well as the big engagements.
Oh, that's great. And plus, yeah, that smooths things out on the revenue side as well when people stay on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's great to have the opportunity to be ongoing and develop and maintain those relationships month to month. Yeah. And it definitely helps with like a steady income stream too.
Totally. Well, so there was so much that we covered in our work together. What would you say are like two or three of the biggest game changers?
I'll go first.
You both just smiled like instantly. So
I wonder if it's the same.
Is it? Wait, ready? 3, 2, 1. Client signaling.
15-minute call. Oh, no.
Okay, so first, the client signaling, you know, you mentioned it a little while ago. It is a game changer in terms of putting your stake in the ground, getting really clear, which is hard and takes work, but is so worth it, to get super clear personally on the work you want to be doing, your vision, the clients you want to attract. And then guess what? It works because people clearly understand who you are, what you can help them with, and that definitely helps to attract the right client.
Yeah, totally. So client signaling, just for folks listening. So client signaling is this strategy where, assuming that you, like you said, Sarah, assuming that you have an idea of who you want to work with and you're really willing to say, this is the type of work I want to be doing, these are the types of clients I want to do it for. Once you have that, then you essentially, you put out little bat signals, like little, it's almost like you put out little hints for your clients that only the right clients can pick up. And so I'm just curious, when you think about client signaling for your business, who are the clients that you were finally able to say like, yeah, I actually, or the work that you were like, I actually want this work. And then I'm curious how you, can you think of a thing that you are actually doing to signal that?
Yes. So what we realized once we nailed this client signaling is that we want to be working with nonprofit organizations that have an established fundraising function in some way. It can be one person, but in some way they have a fundraising function and they're raising or close to raising at least $1 million every year. Those elements were very key to us to like hone in on. And the biggest way we use it is on LinkedIn as our painkiller statement, where people can come to LinkedIn, they see my name or they see Corey's name on his profile, and then they immediately read what it is that we do and who we work with.
And what is that painkiller statement now?
The painkiller statement, Leah, is we help nonprofit development shops to reach their multi-million dollar fundraising goals.
Yes. Okay. What was it before? Do you remember?
Okay. Literally, I had a tagline that was like, mission driven. Now that might tell you that I'm into charity, that might tell you that I'm into nonprofits, but it really says nothing about who we are, who we want to serve, what we do. And then I remember, I should go back and look at some of the earlier iterations we had with you, where we totally thought we nailed it. And then you were like, you know, we could still get more specific, right? As opposed to just saying, I don't know, I think there was one version that was related to very like lofty of increase your nonprofit's philanthropic wealth. And that sounds like I'm a wealth advisor or something, you know? So It was a journey.
We didn't know who we were or what we wanted to be until we really dialed that in. That really helped us define the business.
And I remember some of those conversations where we would, where like about the painkiller and then taking this messaging into and the signaling into your content. And I remember a couple times you would send me something to look at and it was about fundraising.
Yeah.
And I would send it back to you with some notes, but I was like, you're not teaching people how to fundraise anymore.
Right.
Because you could talk all day about fundraising. A lot of fundraisers can talk about fundraising, but you specifically were like, how can we take this thing about fundraising and do some signaling in it so that you're speaking up to an organization that has this function? They're making at least, you know, they're fundraising at least this much and they have multi-million dollar goals. And I think that was a muscle that everybody has to learn. You don't learn it. What is it? You build it, right? A muscle that you have to build, that everybody has to build, but you built it really quickly. Do you remember some of those conversations? Like, how did that feel for you?
Yeah, I do remember those conversations. And sometimes it felt frustrating because you want to find the right words, you want to find the right focus, and it just takes a while to get there. I think another piece as we were doing those back and forths was also learning, much like you said, we're not teaching people how to fundraise 101. It's much higher level than that. In a similar vein, the newsletters we were putting out, the LinkedIn articles we were putting out, the blog posts we were putting out, a lot of it in the past, I was like, here's how to write a grant proposal. And that signals absolutely the wrong thing because I don't want to write grant proposals for people. So that was another learning.
Yeah. And you don't want people who want to write proposals themselves, grant proposals themselves, right? Like you don't, who are like, give me the free stuff so I can do this on my own. You're like, I want to work with a bigger organization that needs strategic guidance.
Exactly. Exactly.
So when we both said the same thing at the same time, yeah. Different things at the same time, I said the 15-minute call. That's because that really helped us to have this really simple way of weeding out the wrong client. And I don't know why we didn't do that before. We'd always schedule like 60 minutes with listen to them ramble on and not really have a guide in terms of what the conversation was going to be about. And so the 15-minute call has been life-changing for us because we've got this great short process with the person who contacted us, and then bringing in those key stakeholders into the conversation before we write the proposal has also been a huge game changer for getting to knowing if it's the right client, but also getting that yes. Mm-hmm.
And that reminds me of a conversation we had where I think you had gone through the sales process with a few people or a few organizations. And even though it's like all systems seem to have pointed to yes, like all systems were go on the surface, something happened with a stakeholder or whatever, where it just was derailed or pushed way out or something. And we talked about how you can actually, it's like actually better to slow this down.
Yes. Better to slow it down. Yes. I think before we were like, let's have a long meeting and then immediately write a proposal and then send it, thinking that somehow that speed would lead to a quicker yes. But actually, it just led to a lot of radio silence. Mm-hmm. Where, for example, one situation we had, I had been in very deep discussions with the board chair of a nonprofit. And he was so gung-ho and really wanted to move things forward. And it wasn't until much later that I finally said, by the way, have you talked to your executive director about this? Because I kept just speaking with him. And then very quickly, the whole thing fell apart because guess what? His executive director was not interested in outside fundraising help. So it was a waste of time, but it was a huge learning experience that I remember the three of us talked through. And that was one of the things that led us to create this slowed down process where we make sure all of the right people are at the table as early as possible, which has definitely led to more successful closes.
Oh, I'm so glad because I think it's so easy to get really excited And especially for people who come in hot, but as we've talked about, and as we talk about a lot in the academy, like hot prospects are actually like the worst. If they're coming in super hot, you'd think they're going to be a fast yes. And oftentimes they're a slow yes, and more likely a slow no. Just, I remember the conversations that we had around these couple opportunities. And you were like, I think we figured out a way to get people to the table. And you were like, can we do this? Can we say like, no, that our process is that we have these people in the conversation or whatever. And I remember saying to you, yeah, you can just what we call make it so. And I'm curious if that is translated elsewhere, because what we often find is that once you sort of adopt this idea of make it so, it makes a lot more things possible.
Yeah. What we've been finding is that the prospective clients that are not willing to follow our process end up being not a fit anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Corey, I don't know if you want to add to that, but.
No, yeah, that's been really fascinating to us. Yeah. And sometimes we do still push it along because we want to make sure we're right about that. But almost in every case when they're like, I'm not going to include the ED or the CEO. It's just me making this. It's okay. This isn't going to work because we're not actually going to figure out what you need without those people providing some input. And then the proposal is not going to be what you need it to be your organization.
Totally. And if you follow that thought into the client relationship, if people are not on board, if people won't come to the table, how can you be successful solving their problems? Right. I mean, one of my academy members always says the way it starts is the way it ends. And I've found that to be true too. Any other things that were like game changers for you in this process?
Your template and the way we talk in the proposal matches our style so much better than what we were doing. We were so mechanical in our proposals and so just like contracty, instead of really showing a true understanding of the client's position and giving them a really customized and feel for who we are in the proposal itself. We could have fun with it a little bit more. And that was definitely, I think that's definitely been a game changer. People, you know, we had one instance where they were so shocked by hearing their own words back. I don't know if you remember this.
Yes, but I do.
They were appalled. So, okay, that's the wrong client. And that was interesting to experience and learn that even how they digest the proposal, their own words, their own problems was a problem for them. And so we realized we can't help them. Right. So
yeah,
that whole thing has been an incredible game changer for us.
Oh, awesome.
Another game changer for us has been thinking about the volume and the like intensity of our marketing at different times. So Leo, when we started working with you, we were in what you call power mode. We were like, we're going to do this many LinkedIn articles a week. We're going to amplify what we're doing. We're going to write more content to put out into the world so that we can attract clients. And that was power mode for quite a while. Then all of a sudden we had so much work. Right now we're in, I hate to say it, but we're not even in simmer mode. I'm in like, holy moly, we're so busy that we were able to pull back on the marketing. So even that frame of mind of we understand what types of marketing we should be doing, and we know that we can adjust the frequency up or down depending on how busy we are and how much we really need to be hustling for clients.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love that. And just if you're listening, so we talk about building a sustainable marketing strategy that has three modes. There's maintenance mode, which is like, what are the activities that you're doing on a regular basis? Just like, you know, status quo, things are just going along. If you want to, or in some cases need to make something happen, then you dial it up to power mode. And if you are super busy or you're going on vacation or whatever's happening in your life, you can downgrade it basically to simmer mode. So having these three modes and this language allows you to continually be doing some type of marketing, even if you're busy. And actually, I remember like a conversation where you were like, we thought we were in power mode, but this is early on, right? This,
yes.
Like, we thought we were in power mode, but we've actually been in simmer mode like forever.
Yeah.
1,000%. I was like, oh my gosh, we're in power mode. I'm sending one e-newsletter a month or even maybe less. And I'm doing one LinkedIn article every couple of months. And really, before working with you, I was also very into my corporate LinkedIn page as opposed to my personal LinkedIn page. And I now understand that the personal LinkedIn page has a lot more traction.
Reach. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I do. And you guys made like your whole, a whole worksheet about the sustainable strategy, right? You made like a checklist.
We did. I made a checklist in Canva. So that was a great way to start. And I used, I would print it out every, it was a monthly checklist with the weekly marketing tasks for that month. But we've since upgraded to Asana. So now we're tracking everything, including our marketing, including our client work, everything in there. So we started with a very simple process and then we were able to upgrade that into a system.
Oh, I love it. I love it. But just the idea that now that you like know what to do and when to do it, and you, there's no, you're not wondering what should I do and when and how much should I, effort should I be putting in? I love that you have this process now.
Yes.
You guys, do you remember very early in our calls, maybe before you signed on, I asked each of you what you would like to see for the other one through this process? Do you remember?
Yes, I remember this.
Do you remember what you said?
Can we guess?
Yeah. I mean, what would you, just thinking back, Sarah, what did you hope for Corey in this process? And then Corey, I'm going to ask you the same thing.
I think that I hoped for Corey that he would gain more clarity and more confidence because he was new to consulting, a clearer sense of who his clients would be and what he would be offering for services, and to feel good about that. Maybe that's what I said.
And Corey, Corey, what did you think you wanted for Sarah?
I think I just wanted Sarah to feel less stressed about the work she didn't like doing. I wanted her to get the work that she wanted to do.
Is that right? I'm going to go back and listen to it. I don't know. I don't know yet. I'm going to go back and listen.
Oh, I thought you had it in front of you.
You know what? I meant to. And then I started the Zoom and I was like, oh crap, I forgot. So go back to the transcript. So Sarah, do you feel like Corey has gotten there?
Very much so. I think he's gotten there and then some. It's been so amazing to watch this person who I love, who I've known for a long time, just gain so much confidence and capability in his consulting life. It's great.
That's so nice to hear.
Yay.
Corey, what about Sarah?
Yeah, 100%. We're working with clients that we're excited about. She'll get off certain calls and be like, oh, just talked about a donor strategy for that whole call and it just felt so good. And she's not, there's much less conversations around the dinner table about all the writing projects that she's thinking about and hates doing. So I think in that way, she still has some writing projects and writing clients, but it seems like the balance has been found because we were able to replace that revenue with something else.
Oh, that's so great. That's so great, you guys. I love how, Sarah, you're like, I've known him for a long time. Like you're married, you have like two children together.
Oh, yeah. But it's so interesting. It's Corey as a husband versus Corey as a professional.
Yeah.
And it's great to watch him really come into his own and as a consultant.
Oh, that's so nice. You guys, what would you say to somebody who's in the position that you guys were in back then? What advice would you give them?
Hire Leah.
You don't have to say that.
I mean, it really did change. Like I was on the verge of like, maybe I should be looking for another job, because I think maybe it's more patience, but you need education. Like you need, we probably wouldn't have been able to do it, figure it out on our own.
It would have taken us a lot longer. We would have had to invent all the things that you already had. I'm going to say something you don't have to include it, obviously, But here's the thing, and I may have told you this, Leah, and Corey knows this. I sit for 11 and a half years now or whatever. I've always seen these coaches online come and go, come through my feed, reach out to me. And I never felt like I was seeing a coach that was going to get down to the brass tacks until I saw you. Okay. So like my advice would be if people are looking for a coach or a consultant to help them with their business, which I think is a great idea, they need to make sure that they're really going to be getting something tangible and concrete out of it. Because there are a lot of very smart, creative people out there with great ideas and great encouragement. But I think you provide the encouragement, the big picture, but also the actual tools. I mean, I remember we would be in a Zoom meeting and we would bring something up that wasn't even necessarily part of what we would see inside of the academy or inside of your program. And you would say, hold on, I have a tool for that. I think having that level of concrete support is totally what I would recommend to somebody who's looking to grow their business.
Mm. Yeah. And thank you for saying that. And also, I mean, as somebody who I've had coaches, I've done programs, you know, and there's just a big mix out there. And it's hard, sometimes it's hard to know. But yeah, this is what I love, like getting into the details and getting into the weeds. And I've always said, like, I don't know if I told you guys this early on, but I was like, I'm not the world's like most woo-woo coach. You know, I'm not like the answers are inside of you. I'm like, do it this way. And here's the thing that you need to do it. Because nobody has time to like figure it out themselves, you know, or like right. find the answers. Like the answers for the proposal are not within you. I'm just going to say that.
Yes. It's not like I can meditate and be like, oh, client signaling. I found it.
Right. And there's a lot of that stuff out there. It's change your mindset or whatever. I'm like, no, yes, change your mindset. Sure. That's got to be part of it. But here's the proposal template, you know?
Right. Well, and to that point too, Leah, you're a one-stop shop. Like you also do mindset, but you make it a piece, a component, not the whole thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I feel like it's the left brain, it's the right brain, it's the mindset, it's the proposal template, it's all of the pieces you need.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
That.
It's true.
I'm curious, what you just said sparked a question for me, you know, because with the mindset stuff, I always talk about how there's a lot of stuff to learn to be good at this, but there's a lot to unlearn as well. And so I'm wondering, is there something that you feel like you have unlearned in this process that's helped you?
What I have unlearned is the idea of subservience to a client. That was a big one. It's more about what you call peering, really treating yourself as an equal partner with the client or the potential client. And carrying yourself in that way. It goes back to what we were talking about with make it so. I am an expert. I am being called upon because I know more than the potential client about the topic at hand. And I can choose to carry myself and conduct the work in a way that feels more equal and less, please hire me.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's something that I'm glad that was something that you were able to unlearn. And oftentimes we see that it carries through far beyond the business.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think it very much goes in line with imposter syndrome that especially a lot of women have. And it's a constant unlearning process, but just having the tools and the vocabulary to keep working on it is really helpful.
Yeah. 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 Corey, what about you? What's something that you've unlearned or are in the process of unlearning?
I mean, I was going to say the same exact thing because I think the peering has been, we even talked about it today around a client. It doesn't need to feel competitive. It doesn't need to feel subservient. It needs to feel trusted and at the same level. And once you get yourself into that mindset, it's very easy to live that way. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I've unlearned. I just did a lot of learning. I really felt like this was a huge professional development piece for me as a consultant.
I think one thing maybe you want to talk about is the pricing early on, your desire to get clients and how you were like underpricing yourself?
Yeah. The value-based pricing was, yeah, huge in terms of what is the value to the consumer. Not thinking about it as like an hourly project that will take this long. So really thinking through, and even on our retainers, like what to charge per month, right? Like just really thinking about what is the value to that nonprofit that will hire us for that service versus how much work is it? How does that divide? How many hours am I going to do? Like that, who cares? Mm-hmm. And that has definitely increased our overall revenue as a result.
Awesome. That way. Awesome. Yeah. All right, you guys, where can folks find you?
Oh, folks can find us on LinkedIn, Sarah M. Jackson and Corey Richard Jackson on LinkedIn. And our website is sarahjconsulting.com.
Awesome. You guys, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your journey, and look forward to seeing where you go next. All right. I want to give a huge thanks to Sarah and Corey for sharing their journey. And if anything that they said spoke to you, be sure to reach out to them on LinkedIn and let them know and say thanks. And real quick, so Sarah and Corey mentioned their sustainable marketing strategy template they created, where they took our sustainable marketing strategy framework and they created a worksheet for themselves to help them stay consistent in their marketing. And they've generously shared it with the community. So if you're in the Academy, you can find Sarah and Corey's exact sustainable marketing strategy template that they use in their business in the marketing playbook section under the sustainable strategy module. So be sure to check that out. All right. So there are so many good nuggets in this conversation, and I want to just pull out a lesson that you can think about for your business. And I think the biggest thing to take away is that if you find yourself doing more of the execution work, but you want to be doing the strategic work, I just want you to know, and I want you to see that it is possible to make that change, that you don't have to be stuck in execution forever. And to make that change, here are the steps. Like, these are the steps that Sarah and Corey took and the steps that I would tell anyone who wanted to make this shift in their business. Number one, position your work in terms of value, which we call the painkiller statement. Number two, show up where your clients are, which for most of us, if you're selling B2B, that's LinkedIn. Number three, share thoughtful content that establishes your expertise. Number four, signal your ideal clients. Number five, lead a great discovery call and uncover the value that clients are looking for. Number six, lead a great sales process. Number seven, scope and price your work for value. Number eight, write proposals that position your work for value. And number nine, help clients say yes. Those are the steps. I mean, simple, right? Simple, but not easy. And I mean, it's funny because I bet if you sat down and thought about it, you could probably come up with those steps too. Because knowing the steps means very little. It means nothing. The problem actually isn't not knowing what to do. The problem is never not knowing what to do. Sorry, I know that's a lot of double negatives, but bear with me. The problem is never that you don't know what to do. It's being able to actually do it. And forget being able to do it. The problem is actually doing it and doing it well. It's like, yeah, I probably know what to do to climb Mount Everest. You know, you probably have to train for it and have the right backpack and the right jacket and gear. You have to have food for the trip and you have to know how to put up a tent in cold weather and how to just put one foot in front of the other until you get to the top of Mount Everest. But just because I know what to do doesn't mean I can just do it. All the women I work with are so smart and so capable, and you know what to do to get clients and build your consulting business. But it doesn't mean you know how to do it. And frankly, it doesn't mean you're doing it. And I know exactly what that's like because that was me too. Like, I knew what to do, but I didn't know how to do it. And because I didn't know how, I did it either poorly or, to be honest, I just didn't do it at all. And I know exactly what that's like because that was me. Like, I knew what to do. I knew that I should be meeting people or posting on LinkedIn or leading a sales process and whatnot. I knew what to do, and I actually kind of had an idea of maybe how to do it, although probably not. But either way, I didn't do it. I just wasn't doing it. But I felt like I was so smart, like I knew what to do. and yet I didn't. So I think we just have to be honest with ourselves about the things we think we know and the things we can actually do and the things we're actually doing. And when you really get down to it, I think we have to be honest with ourselves about the things we're not doing. Because when you're honest with yourself, you can start to close that gap so that your abilities match your intelligence. Because you are too smart to not know how to do this work for your business. But when your abilities match your intelligence, that's when you can start to really do what's necessary. You can actually do what you know needs to be done to build the consulting business you want.